Thanks for joining the Money Happy Hour, where we make every hour a happy hour for your money. I'm your host, Tom, the Savings Captain. And, of course, I'm joined by my producer, Radish, the hardest working dog in podcasting. Hey, in today's episode, we're going to talk about heated steering wheels and also give an update on Radish's portfolio. But before we do that, let me first say, if you're new to Money Happy Hour, welcome. And if you're returning, welcome back. As you listen, please hit that subscribe button wherever you listen to your podcast on, and we would appreciate a 5-star review. So I'm going to give a little bit more context on this heated steering wheels and why I'm even talking about heated steering wheels. Let me go ahead and say the last month has been a crazy month for our household. Many of you know we had a move. It was actually a month ago today we actually moved into our new place, getting settled in. But there was a period right there at the move, within about a 72-hour period, we had this go on. A move, my daughter was involved in a multi-car accident, totaled her car. And if you follow my count on an X, fortunately and just thankfully, she was okay, walked away from the accident scratch free. And then sadly, my father-in-law, my wife's dad, did pass away at the very ripe age of 93, just about 94 years old. So we've had a crazy few weeks. But the reason I'm talking heated steering wheels, I just wanted to give a little bit more context what's been going on and what's really just prompting this discussion on heated steering wheels. I'm going to give two examples that I have bumped into that really showcase being a consumer. And being a consumer based on fear and emotion can lead us to sometimes questionable buyer's remorse type buying decisions. A lot of comments, you know, we see a lot of replayed, rehashed, trite comments on don't overspend, you know the difference between wants and needs. Well, that's all good and great, but it's good to play that out in real life examples. So I wanted to share a couple of real life examples we have run into as a family when it comes to big purchase decisions and purchase decisions where we bumped into a combination of where wants and needs can kind of get clouded. So the whole thing around the heated steering wheel thing, it came up as I wouldn't call it a joke. I put a post out on X probably 3 weeks ago. So turning back, my daughter was driving a Volvo XC90 when she totaled her car, walked away from it scratch free. And we have been driving Volvos in our house close to 30 years now, own a full fleet of Volvos pretty much. This is the second Volvo my daughter has had an accident in and totaled, and in both cases walked away scratch free. So our purchase was like going into it. My daughter, we all knew, oh, you need a new car now. What are you getting? It's going to be a Volvo XC90. And the way we typically have bought these Volvos in general and cars in general is we haven't bought a new car since, I can't remember, maybe George Bush was president. It's been a while. Instead, we make our purchase decisions on cash purchase decisions a few years old, and especially with Volvos, I let other people take the big depreciation hit. They are very expensive cars. We typically end up buying a model $50,000 to $70,000 original sticker price. I wait a few years, let the initial buyer take the purchase hit. So I say all that when I put a post out on X, I understood completely misunderstood. There's only so much context you can provide in the course of a text or a post on X rather. So I thought I'd use this conversation to go a little bit deeper, provide a little bit more context. What I put out on X was simply, are heated steering wheels a necessity? And I tell you what, it got hundreds of responses. Most of the responses were, Why are you telling me what to buy? Why are you saying what's a necessity or not? And I get that. The context here, I'm not telling you what to do with your money, but follow along with this example, and I'm going to demonstrate sometimes what we think we want or need, how much it adds to the overall purchase price of what we're buying. I'm going to show you that in a car purchase decision we were very close to making for my daughter. So I got a lot of responses. Now, that question really had nothing to do with heated steering wheels. I challenge you to think broader than a heated steering wheel in a car and a future purchase decision. It's called an allegory. It's called almost teaching through a parable, through an example, right? So I'd say maybe three people got the point. And the point was exactly what we're going to talk about now. When you're making a major purchase decision, it's really important to step back from the emotion, the sometimes tactile benefits that we get that feel so good, it's kind of like it draws you down to making a purchase decision you probably didn't even know you wanted. And you may not have needed. So the heated steering wheel thing, let's talk into this specific car purchase. Now, keep in mind, as many of you know, I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. We get maybe 3 days a year where a heated steering wheel would even be useful, in my opinion. But the reason I came into a heated steering wheel decision, we were test driving a handful of used Volvo XC90s. And there was one Volvo XC90 we went to look at. And it was a chilly day for Charlotte standards in late March. Maybe it was in the high 40s. Well, the first thing I noticed when we took the car on the test drive, I started it up, was, hey, the steering wheel's kind of hot. It felt nice. It was pretty enjoyable. It was kind of useful that day. So it got me thinking. It got me thinking, because here I'm considering making a purchase. I'm taking it on a test drive, and then I've got a really good Volvo-certified mechanic. Wanted to put the car up in the air, take a look at it, run a few diagnostic tests. But as we were test driving the XC90 with the heated steering wheel, I started thinking a little bit more about this. What else comes in this package? And there was another feature on this XC90 that really drove up the price of the car. And it was a hybrid engine. So it was gas and electric powered, which was kind of cool. But keep in mind, this is for my daughter. My daughter is a college student. My daughter lives in a college town, parks it in a garage, but she doesn't have easy access to EV charging. So on top of that, not only that, the charging, the electric range was only 20 miles. So it was just basically, it's useful for the, I hate to say it, like the soccer mom that's running a couple of errands throughout the day that where the trips are going to be 10 or 20 miles or less, parks it in the garage and has easy access to charging. That didn't fit the consumption decision we were doing. But the point I was trying to make was that heated steering wheel that felt nice actually came with a bunch of other features. One of them was the hybrid engine, and this would have cost about $5,000 more than a comparable traditional ICE or gasoline-powered Volvo. That's the point I'm making, folks. How often do we sit back? How often do we contemplate a purchase decision? We go into a showroom, we're looking online, and all of a sudden we are kicking the tires, or we're two clicks in. And before you know it, maybe we have a price and a product fully in mind that we've researched, but based on emotions, looking at it a little too deep, we end up buying something we don't need. So the story ended. We got the exact Volvo XC90 that we wanted at, I'm not kidding you, to the exact dollar we wanted it. It was a fair trade. It was owned by a private owner, negotiated, mechanic, felt very comfortable with the car. It did not have a heated steering wheel. Kind of funny, in the glove box, it did have it does have something you could put a drink in and cool. So picture a can, a soft drink can, or a water bottle. You could stick it in the glove box and it keeps it cool. We didn't buy it for that feature, but it was just one of those things, that came with it. But how often, and I was very guilty of this. My wife and I were very guilty of this in our 20s, 30s especially, and have to check our emotions and fears when we're making purchase decisions to just stick to, be open, but stick to what we want. Stick, be an informed consumer and step back. That was the purpose. That was the purpose of that post. And that, my ask would be, when you're making a big purchase decision, kind of bump those thoughts against the purchase decision. Do you want it? Do you need it? If a heated steering wheel is something you really want, need, go do it and you got the money. But also just quantify everything that comes along with it. Now, I have another example. This is an example as a homeowner. So as I said at the opening, we just moved. We're 30 days into the house. It's great. Everything is working. There are no skeletons in the closet. The neighbors are great. You know, that's the biggest fear when you move into a house. It passes inspection. Everything looks good. It passes the eye test. You get it for what you want. We knew we were going into it without a mortgage. So there were a lot of delighters on the front end. But really, after you spend those first few nights in the house, that's when things go bump in the night. Maybe a leak, a noise that you never would have heard, things like that that require immediate attention. Thankfully, 30 days in, we have none of that. Everything is working as planned. The neighbors are great. But there are a few things when we bought the house we knew we wanted to change. We made those assumptions in the purchase price. If we spend $10,000 here, $5,000 here to kind of modify some landscaping, redo a room, we left room in our budget for stuff like that. So I say all that to tell you this story. As a homeowner, we're walking into this, and this actually pissed me off quite a bit. And I do want to share this because it's a company I think very highly of, Home Depot. So one of the things that we wanted to do in our old house, we had a great front door entry. We really like the glass. They call it lights, I think, glass. It's half glass and half, I guess you'd call it wood. In some cases, they're fiberglass. But our current house has a full door, full wood door. We do have a great transom that's lighted, lets light flow in at the top, and a great glass lighted side to where the door is. We're very content with that. We love that. We want to keep that in place. Structurally, everything's fine. There's no leaks, no problems. The only thing we wanted to do was replace the door. That's what we were in the market to do. And we wanted to replace the door almost to replicate our old house. A door that has glass, and then we can shade it at night, but glass so we can let natural light in during the day. So we agreed, my wife and I intentionally made that decision when we bought the house that this is one of the things on the punch list we were going to take care of. So one day we're shopping in Home Depot for something else for the house. We go by, I guess it's like an in-store home design center. We talk to a person, my wife starts talking, we start talking. The next thing they know, we've got an appointment where a guy is going to come out, take a look, you know, give us a quote, give us a price, some great ideas. Home Depot being Home Depot, just helping you out. Helping you out around the house. Well, this guy comes out about a week later. And it's a salesperson from their design center. Brings out a bunch of samples, things like that. Shows us things on his laptop.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host, Matt Heslin, brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
So his sale is based on, we only wanted a door. Well, he is saying we have got to replace the door. If we're going to replace the door, we got to replace the whole kit. So that would be the transom, the side window. I said, okay, well, let's work up a price on that. And what I really didn't like was his why. And I've matured enough now as a consumer, and so has my wife. Our antennas went up. His why was all based on fears. His why was all based on fears. It was already, you know, if you're doing this, you've got to replace the whole thing, because if you just put the door, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. You might not get a good fit. You could have leaks. Oh, if you go to an independent contractor or a handyman, they could go belly up. They're not going to warranty it, and they might not stand behind their work. Fear after fear after fear. And as a consumer, who wants to be taken? All right, so a lot of emotional signals being sent out. He worked up a price. The price was, it's called $8,000 to do the whole job. Well, just to give you a little bit of basis, we had priced this out at about a quarter of that, just getting the exact door we wanted and installed from a guy we trust and know. The point I'm trying to make, maybe what the guy is saying is at Home Depot is true, but it's all based on fear. If you think about it, step back for a second. What's the worst thing that could happen? I put a door in a year later. I can't find the guy who did it, which is doubtful in this case. But let's just say he goes belly up or keels over. What's the worst case? I have to get a handyman or a general contractor to come out and do a repair, a modification, maybe sink another $1,000 into it. I'm willing to make that bet instead of jumping in with the full safety and security of which Home Depot is trying to sell. So I call that example out. Those of you who are buying homes, making major purchases, keep your antenna up for those things. On top of that, I want to share this. Another thing that confirmed some of the skepticism. When a salesperson, I appreciate sales. I have been a salesperson in my life. Follow-up is important, but pestering, there's a fine line between follow-up and pestering. As a consumer, when I get pestered after the sales call, that is a big signal too that, hey, there's a very highly commission-motivated person where I'm probably paying a significant markup to get this product. I know dealing with a contractor, it's sometimes hard to get that follow-up one-on-one, but that's a guy making a living out of his truck. I understand that and appreciate that. Those timely follow-ups can be precious because their time is precious. But I had this guy following up with us. He told us it was going to take 8 to 12 weeks, and he was pestering me sometimes 3 times a day. And I'm like, dude, if it's going to take 8 to 12 weeks, it can wait a day or two for us to truly make a decision on this. That kind of shut him up. So end of the story, we met with a guy yesterday. He laughed at the whole story. It's an independent general contractor that we know. By early May, he's going to have the exact door we wanted put in place, installed, and we'll probably have about $6,000 extra in our pocket. So the lesson here is a lot of times we hear investing decisions are based, you know, don't make your investing decisions based on fear and emotions. Add this to the pile. Don't make your consumption decisions based on fear and emotions either. There's a lot of hidden costs there. I hope you found that part helpful, but let's quickly turn over to Radish's portfolio. I want to give an update on this. So if this is your first time, hearing about Radish's portfolio, you know, like, what's Radish's portfolio? What's that? Well, Radish is, you know, as our producer Radish has gotten some pocket money from doing this podcast over the last year, and she's investing for the future. So Radish's portfolio is based on my portfolio. It's a holding by holding, for the most part, replicates my larger portfolio. And we started Radish's portfolio in December with $400. Radish has been great. She's adding $25 a week to it and continuing to grow. But what Radish is demonstrating with this portfolio, if you're new to investing, kind of how to do it, and what we hope to see in Radish's investing journey is how small but consistent additions just add up over time. So let's just take a look at Radish's portfolio. It's been a rough week or two in the market. Sure has. This wasn't the market Radish started investing in. And how often does it happen as an investor? I think about people that maybe start investing in some of the great bull runs that I've been in, and they start at it and the market gets tough and they pack it in. But Radish is going to keep investing through it. She went in with conviction on her holdings, and she's going to continue adding cash for it. We're going to step her up from $25 a week to a higher number now because she's making a little bit extra money. So she's going to be intentional about that, and she's going to be methodical adding to things. So let's look at some of her holdings. I'm going to start with her ETFs. The ETFs are the anchor of her portfolio. She uses two ETFs, VTI, which is the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index Fund, and SCHD. She uses VTI because we want to capture the S&P 500, but someday, somehow, somewhere, broad-based small cap and mid-cap exposure could be important. So that's the rationale. That's the basis on VTI over VU. If you want to go into that topic a little bit deeper, I believe it's episode 49. I go a little bit deeper into VTI versus VU, and I think that's one of the more simple but yet complex decisions I see investors, including myself, make: VTI or VU, or S&P over total stock market, whatever your investing brand is. But I go into it more in that episode. And then SCHD wanted broad-based dividend exposure in the account. So those are the anchors. Those are the two ETFs we own. Right now, we're right on target. When we opened up the account, the investment benchmark that we were going to use was keep 70% of Radish's account invested in ETFs. As of this morning, we're at 68-69%. And then out of the ETF exposure, 75% of the money, 3/4 goes to VTI, 1/4 goes to SCHD. So you with me there? 70% of the account in those ETFs, and then 3/4 in VTI, 1/4 in SCHD. Now, the other 30%, that's going to be everything else. Those are going to be the individual holdings that we have. In my account, Radish has largely replicated those and a little bit of cash on hand. So the bottom line dollar, what is Radish's account valued at as of market open on April 16th, 2024, it is up to $821 right now. So we're seeing a little bit of drag on overall performance. Old dollars are taking a hit. New dollars are coming in. And as of this morning, she has $58 in change invested or sitting in cash right now. So she's had about 8% cash in her portfolio. You know, you think about it every week, it's a small portfolio at this size, $25 every week coming in. The cash doesn't get invested immediately, but we fully keep her investing in something almost every week. All high conviction ownings, things that Radish is going to own for a long, long time and pass down as she builds generational wealth to future puppies out there. But Radish has a handful of other stocks. I'm going to touch on a couple of them. I'll call them all out. I'll touch on a couple of them. Kava, one of our favorite. Like I said, she loves Kava, healthy food choices. She loves that most of the food is served in bowls. Ha ha ha. Get it? Kava has gone up way too much, way too fast. They've told us, just like the Fed's telling us higher for long, Longer Kava told us last earnings report, their margins are going to be stronger. They're going to come down 2 or 3 percentage points. The stock had no business trading up at 71 last week. I don't even know if it merits the 61 or 62 handle it has now. But she owns some Kava, and she's going to continue owning that and buying more of it. We've held off buying it because I didn't buy her in on this small account. I've been buying it every week in my account, much larger account. I just want to build out a very big position in that because I'm thinking the long game, 5 years plus on it. But there are other areas I want to grow more immediately in Radish's account and also seek value in the current market. So a couple of value names I've been going into is Duke Energy. Had a great chance, got some of it in the high 80s, low 90s. Earlier, we had a little utility rally, went up to 96, settling back now. We'll keep an eye on that. Hershey's has moved to the top of the buy pile. It's at $182 and change. We're going to add to it here. I find it very interesting. I'm reading more about this. Remember, cocoa prices are out of control. Cocoa is a commodity. Commodities tend to do one of two things, go parabolic or go into very deep bear markets. Cocoa is parabolic right now. I know a lot of it's justified, but I'm reading more about cocoa than I ever thought I would in my life. And I think there is some optimism coming down the pike in several quarters that the cocoa markets will cool off. That happens. Some of the margin and pricing pressures that Hershey is experiencing on the chocolate side of the business ease. So we're scooping up some here in the 180s. I don't like on the chart. It seems like the last three periods, it's made a, if you look at the chart, it's made a lower high and a lower low each time. So at 182 and change, we could see a little bit of pullback, but that's okay. We're building out the position there. Coke, All Weather, we're going to continue picking some up there at $58. I do a weekly challenge in it. I've owned the stock for 20-something years personally, and I'm actually adding to it again this year for the first time in, several years, at least 5 years. Want to touch on just a couple of other names here. I'm going to touch on Starbucks. At $85, I think it's almost a de-risked on the charts. They look a little sloppy, probably see 77, 79 as a test coming up. But if you're building out a position, have long-term conviction in this market, and also with Starbucks in general, this could be a very good entry point. There's a few things I like with Starbucks. Price to sales, 2.9. Much lower than a lot of fast, casual type restaurants. Typically, you see a 5 to an 8 handle there in price to sales. Now, margins do influence the price to sales bit. Not going to ignore that. But don't sneeze, Mark. Starbucks has a 15% plus margin. And their $1 billion, I've said this on a couple of other podcasts, I would not want to be a supplier to Starbucks. Starbucks is in a multi-phase $1 billion or so cost-cutting initiative with their suppliers. When they're done with that, all things being equal, it could add 2 to 3 percentage points to their margins. I like that. Now, I don't know what's going to happen. The dollar has been strong. Does that hurt things going forward or neutralize that? It very well could from an overseas standpoint. But just try not to overthink this one. If I can get close to a 3% dividend, that's what it will be if Starbucks trades in the 70s. And I have 5 years on this stock. I've bought Starbucks. I've owned Starbucks. I was looking at it for about 14 years now. I've had three, maybe this is the fourth. I call it air pockets. Great time to buy when the stock dips. It's worked well for me in the past. I don't think they're going out of business. So those are the stocks I wanted to touch on. Kind of exciting. Don't be surprised if in my personal portfolio or in a future Radish update, you hear me talk about a little bit more about this. Here's a stock I have always wanted to own. I've been on the wrong side of the trade for 30-something years. It is at the top of my watch list again. Very rare when I add a new name. could be adding McDonald's here, trading at 266, has some support here. I know I'm overthinking it. I know I'm being contradicting myself. I'm telling you now, don't overthink Starbucks. And here I go overthinking McDonald's. That's probably why I haven't owned it in 30 years. But watching that one closely, it looks like it has 240 to 250. If we go risk off a little bit, and if geopolitical tensions continue to hold up, question marks in the economy, you know, rah, 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 blah, 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 all that stuff. Don't be surprised if we're new owners of McDonald's going forward. Then the other thing I'm contemplating doing, I own Bitcoin. I think I'm going to own a lot more Bitcoin personally. You know, I want to go into the full thesis here, why to own it. I think in the context of my broader portfolio, it makes sense. It is almost, hit me in the notes, positively or negatively. In a way, I'm just going to call it a store of value to a certain degree. I'll leave it at that. But Radish doesn't have exposure to Bitcoin in this portfolio. That might change between now and the next episode, the next update in the May timeframe. So don't be surprised if, you know, Radish starts chipping away and buying a little bit of Bitcoin every week. And it is not based on FOMO. That is not why I buy anything. I own Bitcoin, haven't bought it in 2 or 3 years. Last I was buying it was probably in the, I think 37 range was the highest I bought it. So folks, that is it. That's the update. I wish you well. I wish you peace, prosperity in your financial journey. And as always, until next time, thanks for making a happy hour at the Money Happy Hour. Have a great day.